Hi, I'm Dr. Pam Peek, and welcome to episode 287 of Her, the podcast where you're going to hear the naked truth about her mind, her body, her life. And today we're going to talk about an extraordinary journey when a CEO transitions as transgender. An incredible story. And so just sit down, grab that cup of tea, honey, because we're going to rock and roll. We have a terrific show coming up, and just know that this episode is made possible by our wonderful friends at Smarty Pants Women's Vitamins, the delicious once-a-day gummies that contain all of the essential vitamins, minerals, and omega oils customized just for women. To learn more, hop on over to SmartyPantsVitamins.com. All right, now here's your first official reminder to run on over to iTunes after this episode to rate and review the show. I always look forward to your feedback, and you're going to love it. Okay, it's time for Her.
Her, the podcast.
The naked truth about women.
Her mind, her body, her life.
It's all about her.
So, The Wall Street Journal happens to be one of my favorite places to troll. I have way too much fun because, as you most of you know, I'm not just a physician, but I am also a Wall Streeter, and I've worked within the domain of private equity for years. And so here I am happily bouncing around article to article, and then my eyes popped out of my head when I read an article I had been praying to read, and it finally happened. Here's the title of the article: What Happened When a CEO Came Out as Transgender? And the subtitle: When Nolan's Life-Changing Transition Stirred Surprise, Support, and New Challenges at the Company She Runs. Everyone, I want to welcome to the show Wynn Nolan. Wynn, welcome to the Her Podcast.
Why, thank you so much for having me. It's a pleasure to be with you.
Wynn Nolan is the chairwoman and chief executive officer of Bradley and Parker. In addition to her corporate responsibilities, she still continues in her role as point person for many of the firm's most valuable clients and is key in negotiating terms with the commercial insurance companies with whom Bradley and Parker places its risks. And my goodness gracious, you worked your way all the way up in there, didn't you, Wynn?
That is true. I'm kind of an anomaly these days. I recently celebrated, and I hate to do this as I wrote the other day because I see people doing the math in the background. I started with our firm 34 years ago this September.
Wow. Okay. I'm impressed. I'm totally impressed. But you had to do it. You had to go there. It's just the best place. So I'm going to read the first part of the article.
Sure.
Which I thought kind of said it all. One May morning in 2017, just weeks after her 56th birthday, Bradley and Parker chief executive Wynn Nolan hit send on an email to the insurance broker's workforce. It was no routine memo. And this is what it said. I am writing to tell you about a matter that is essentially personal, but will result in some changes at work, she began. After a lifetime living as a man named Wayne, but hiding her true self, she wrote, I will be transitioning my gender. Wow. Okay, Wynn, what do you feel when I read that? It's like, wow. You know, just seeing it in print like that.
Yeah, so it really, at this point to me, it's just part of the story, part of my story, part of the story here at this great company I'm privileged to run. It was certainly not something I did lightly and not something I did without considerable planning. But for myself personally, the outcome of having hit that send button went better than I could have ever hoped for. So for me, it really is just an exclamation point on just how well it's turned out for me.
Wow. And that's exactly what the article bore out. And that is the immense support you got as you were messaging this. And I just think that that's an incredible reflection, one, on the fact that I'm probably multifactorial. I think you would agree. And that is one, we live in a different...
No doubt.
We live in a different world today. 25 years ago, not so much. I mean, correct me if I'm wrong.
I think that's absolutely correct.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And the other thing is, this is a real testament to you. You as a leader of a company, it's very interesting. I want to give people a perspective. Across America, an estimated 1.4 million U.S. adults are transgender, double the number a decade before, according to a UCLA analysis of government data. And more are coming out on the job, but far fewer have done it while leading a company. Now, what I loved about your journey was, how did you apply your skills as an experienced business leader to manage and message your personal transition with employees and colleagues?
So I think that I've thought about this often, as you might imagine, and I have a few different kind of, I guess, hypotheses as to why this has been in large margin successful. First of all, I think I've always been an empathetic leader. I think part of that has to do, we were kidding around a few moments ago about how long I've been with this company. I've done so many different jobs and have held so many different roles here. When I started out all those years ago, I was literally knocking on doors to sell insurance, which is not anybody's idea of a great time. And so I have a tremendous amount of empathy for our team, wherever they might be in their careers. And I think what happens in general is that people often have, let's call them, preconceived notions about transgender people. And most of the time, those preconceived notions are kind of formulated not by their own personal experience, but by their exposure to, let's call it, outside stimulation, outside political views, news media, you know, all the different ways we get our information. And I think what happens frequently, not all the time certainly, but frequently, when people that might even be anti-trans people, who might have negative opinions of trans people, when they come face to face with someone that they know and that they respect and that has helped them and that maybe has mentored them, they have to come to a resolution within themselves of their experience, their real experience with that actual living person versus these outside stimulations they've gotten that perhaps improperly informed their decision-making process. So I think that the fact that I had built up a very good rapport with most of our team, I kind of had some good capital in the bank. So while they may not have understood what I was doing, or some of them agreed with what I was doing, they gave me the benefit of the doubt. And with that benefit of the doubt, you know, you can build a bridge that leads to long-term understanding.
And it, all of that sounds like a great business leader, which is what you are. And I think that you capitalized on skills that you have honed for 34 years. To be able to do this, to be able to message this in a compassionate, empathetic way, And also a way where you gave color to the context. And that is, people walk into this really ill-prepared when they're confronting someone who is going through the transition and has transitioned. All they really have, in many respects, are stereotypic things that they've been exposed to in social media, multimedia, and however. I think that there's a real need for education about what that journey's really about and what you went through, to say the least. I mean, you know, you alluded to this beautifully in the Wall Street Journal piece, and that was, it's interesting. You felt for all those years when you were not out that you couldn't be yourself. I can't imagine something more painful in many respects. You can't feel like you can be yourself. So instead, you did what I guess a lot of people do, and the coping mechanism was to work, and I'll use your words, ridiculous hours to avoid focusing on the conflicts. So what do you mean by ridiculous? What was going on during that time?
Well, I think I have an ability, and I think a lot of people have this ability to deal with all sorts of things that people have to deal with in their lives. And that is, I just have a good ability to compartmentalize. So I was able to kind of put those personal issues kind of aside, because really I didn't think at the time I had many options. So when you don't think you have a lot of options to do with something, you know, you can either like crawl up in a ball and not do anything, which would not be me, or how I did it, I just kind of, you know, locked them away off to the side and threw myself into my career here and some other side interests and charitable funds, charitable pursuits I'm in. So I think certainly in some ways it did help me keep more focused. You know, it's hard to say what would have happened in an alternative version because, you know, those situations don't exactly play out. But I do feel as though it did help keep me more focused on the projects and the goals that I had for myself.
Yeah, and I'm going to tell you, well, I'm a stress physiologist and researcher in addition to being a physician, and I can't imagine the stress you've been under, you know, just not being yourself. I mean, can you describe that? What I'm trying to do is get people to understand that when we don't have a society that is more welcoming and more nurturing and supportive, the person has this enormous burden of stress that they have to carry with them day in and day out. Help people understand.
Yeah, so that's true. But I do have to say, certainly just as with all life experiences, every transgender person deals with that part of themselves in their own way. And they certainly experience the discomfort to different degrees and how they deal with it in different degrees. So I really feel that I was quite fortunate because I did have this ability to kind of put it off to the side. And it certainly didn't, in many ways, negatively impact my life. It certainly caused a toil on my personal relationships, because those are all jumbled up in this kind of situation. But, you know, fortunately for me, it didn't affect my career. But why acceptance is so virtually important, and really one of the main reasons that I agreed to start to tell my story publicly, is exactly what you said. Just because I'm a good example of somebody who was able to use a variety of coping mechanisms to excel at their career and be able to live a mostly fruitful life, there are many people who are paralyzed because of this. And they are nowhere near as fortunate as I am. And by society continuing to put their thumb on these kinds of people, It is just exacerbating that situation and not letting them lead any kind of a happy or fruitful life. So that's the part to me that's really disturbing. I consider myself lucky in a lot of different ways. I have the advantage of privilege. I have some financial holdings that made it a lot easier for me to transition than many people. So it really is, to me, so important that we have this discussion in this country these days and make sure that everybody is accepted for who they are and given the opportunities that, you know, we would all want for all of our friends and loved ones.
I love it. You know, it's interesting. I was reading the comments from the article, and they're just overwhelmingly positive. And just, you know, sharing. It's almost like someone said here, it was a breath of fresh air. To be able to have someone as articulate as you are message this, and to be able to open up a conversation. I mean, a real conversation, a dialogue about this in the first place, so that all of us, you know, I as a provider, as a physician, I was never trained in any of this, and most providers are not. Most of the medical profession is not. And so there's a very big burden of education that has to happen there to be able to create that nurturing and supportive environment. And it takes people like yourself who are willing to step it up out there and to share and to educate, to get the ball rolling already, because I think enough is enough. That's why I just immediately, I think I was probably the first person to yell and scream and jump up and down and say, I want this damn interview, because we have amazing ways to get that word out. And wait till you see our social media spin when this goes live, because I want everyone to hear your voice. Let me ask you a quick question. You know, it was a question that was brought up by a number of people who knew I was going to be doing the interview from our team. And they were really looking at this whole issue of sort of a tipping point. When did you really decide that, as you said, to transition, as it were, from I'm just fated to be this way to, well, wait, this could happen and then it should happen. What happened in your life at that time?
So that kind of evolutionary process that you just outlined is actually exactly what happened. And I think, you know, to a large degree, this comes back in a way to what we were just talking about, which is public education, public acceptance. You know, when I first really, you know, I always knew that something was different about me. I mean, I can go back to when I was 5 or 6 years old, and I can remember things that kind of clued me in as to what I was feeling and why it wasn't the typical experience that a 5 or 6 year old boy would have. But as I got older and you start to sort these things out, you know, this just was unheard of. And, you know, in addition to it just being unheard of generally, I was the product of a very traditional conservative Irish Catholic family. And so, you know, it just didn't seem like this option was even available to me. But as time went on, a number of things happened. First of all, the information superhighway. I mean, how many things today, when we come up with something that we're thinking about from all sorts of topics, we're just now a few clicks away to getting a tremendous amount of information. And, you know, that's actually been going on for quite a while now. You have to stop and think about it sometimes, that especially for those of us who are older, that this just didn't really show up a few years ago. We're going on to 20, 25 years now of this kind of information being really so readily available. So that was one thing. I found out that it was really, you know, it was physically possible to do what I wanted to do. So that was one factor. The other factor was really just more of, even though we have a long way to go, we're much further as a culture and a nation in the past very few years than we were just 10 years ago. And I had a few kind of trailblazers for me. This is, for whatever reason, this fact has kind of escaped a lot of people. The founder of Sirius Radio transitioned. Her name is Martine Rosenblatt. And a leader of a public utility up in Vermont transitioned while on the job. Her name was Christine Halquist, and she actually ended up running for governor in Vermont, getting the Democratic nomination, but ultimately losing in the general election. So there have been some trailblazers. And of course, there was the very public transition of Caitlyn Jenner. And while a lot of people in the trans community have some issues with Caitlyn because of her political views, which I think she's moderated lately, the fact remains that for a large portion of, you know, quote unquote, normal Americana, they learned a lot about this process from her very public transition. So kind of a combination of all of those things made me realize that, you know, in kind of a casual way to say it, that I could, quote, pull this off, unquote.
Well, guess what? Welcome to the Trailblazer Society. Okay, come on now. Hello. You know, you're talking about a lot of people in politics and in the entertainment industry and all the rest of it. Don't you think it was time for a CEO to step up?
Yeah, you know, no doubt. No doubt. And but, you know, of course, the bigger question would be, if I had transitioned 10 years ago, would I still be CEO? So that's a question, I'm sure, for another day. But that's a thought-provoking question, because women are still routinely discriminated against in the workplace. If we look at the number of women CEOs in the country, I think the number is 5% of CEOs are women. That is a ridiculously low number. So we have, as women, we have a long way to go before we're anywhere near parity. And I have to say, harking back to something we were talking about before with that you brought up, that, you know, minds have to be changed and people have to be educated. You mentioned you're kind of a fan of the Journal. Well, so am I, you know, because the editorial pages of the Journal in the past were not very friendly towards trans folks.
Absolutely.
And I will tell you that I think a lot of people were very surprised that the Journal, with its current ownership and the slant that it's had for years, covered this story and covered it in such an honest way without being sensationalism, you know, without using any sensationalism at all. And kind of the other counter to that, which I was really heartened by, was, you know, much like you've called after you saw the story, I was also called by Fox Business and was on Mornings with Maria a couple of Thursdays ago. And, you know, that's considered an extremely conservative show. And they treated me with the utmost respect. And it was clear to me that they were trying to get out the positive aspects of the story and not the negative aspects that a lot of other really ultra-conservative people try to spin.
I love it.
So kudos to those organizations, because that's what has to change. You know, all the people that are supporters, they're always going to be supporters. The challenge is to convert the non-supporters to becoming more accepting.
You're absolutely right. Amen to that. Now, after this came out, did you have people reach out to you who are, you know, in the C-suite, or relatively speaking, who are asking for some guidance and maybe can you help me here a little bit? Almost tenuously, maybe they're scared. They're like, what do I do? I'm not sure. It's not like, you know, there's a manual. Have you had people reach out to you, Wynn?
Not many. I definitely have had some reach outs. I had some before, you know, this recent news coverage. You know, listen, like most businesses, the insurance community here in the greater New York area is a tight community. You know, probably within a day of me coming out, it was pretty well known here in this area that it had happened. So I did get a few people reach out to me at that point. And then certainly since the journal article, I've had a few more. And you know, I just try to guide them as best they can. You know, I had a really heart-tugging, in more of an informal reach out through social media of a young trans woman who is, I guess, in her late teens, and she's having a very difficult time because her parents are totally non-supportive. So those things are certainly very distressing, and, you know, I try to help them as best I can.
Yeah, that's got to be tough. I'll put money on it that as this feature article, you know, circulates more and more, you're going to be hearing a lot more. There's no question. How has your life changed since this article has come out?
Really not very much. You know, like I said, there's been some reach outs from folks like yourselves, and we're certainly trying to accommodate that. You know, I would be lying if I didn't report that there are still haters out there. And we've had several examples of that as well. So, you know, as much of the story is certainly good, I think we do need to talk about some of these negative aspects to be reminded that these kinds of people are still out there, the kinds of people that would find my office number, which isn't that difficult, but they had to do a little investigation, and leave a really, really nasty and hateful message, or to take the time to find the email addresses for all the executive members of our team and send an email making believe they're a customer and asking why they would want to do business with a firm that was headed by me. So along with all the good, we have these things, you know, all the good is peppered with some bad. And I think we just look at that as an example of why we need to do this and continue to try to change minds so we end up drowning those people out.
Yeah, thank you. And, you know, I was going to get to that, so I'm glad you brought it up, which is the whole issue of the haters. And the people who would judge, and the people who are ill-informed and are just going to that place. I mean, look, the same thing happened, you know, 100 years ago when women said, hey, how about us for the vote? Didn't the Constitution say something about inalienable rights for everybody? And, you know, just silly me, right, but I thought I was part of everybody. And then
you didn't see any carve-outs there for those,
yeah,
for those,
I'm like, wait
groups,
a minute,
right?
Yeah. Wait a minute, you know, come on now. And so it took them, you know, and this was a global phenomenon because it took place in Europe as well as the United States. People forgot that the suffrage, you know, went on like that for a long time. And it was a minimum of 3 years until they finally got what they needed. And they really led a cause in a really strategic and well-planned way. Their methods were amazing. They just sort of hung in there until, damn it, you listened to them and planted their little behinds right in front of an office of, you know, one of the political leaders until, damn it, you listened to them. And that's all they really wanted. And they were extremely effective. Needless to say, I could sit here today and so can you. As women who can vote, we can vote and we can do all these other things. Do we still have a long way to go? Heck yeah. But guess what? Inch by inch, right? And you fight for that and you hold on to it. And that's what you do. Now, let me ask you a question. I just want this to be, as we kind of bring this to a head here, I mean, because this is just, I feel so blessed and grateful to have the opportunity to talk to you, Wynn, because this opens up everyone's eyes, including yours truly. If there was someone out there listening to my podcast, and they were on the fence, just like you were at one point, and they were saying, you know, how do I take that first step? What do I do? What if you were guiding someone right now? Talk to that person, Wynn. What would you say to that person?
So I think the number one thing I would share with people is that a tremendous amount